Technorama episode 548, Certain Defeat.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Okay, I got a joke for you. Two men and a pig walk into a bar.
Over there, in the media corner.
Oh, I guess you heard that one already.
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Or was it a man carrying a pig walks into a bar? I can't remember how it goes. Anyway, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If you are joining us for the first time, welcome. Thank you for joining us. It's good to see you, hear you, be in your ears, be in your mobile device, whatever it is. My name is Chuck Tomasi. And, oh wait, I forgot, if you're a returning listener, thanks for coming back. We really, really do appreciate it. Now, if you didn't catch that last part, I'm Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me as always is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
Hey, I'm joining you from dark South Carolina. Well, I'm just dandy.
Dark now, too, because you changed your clock and made me want to go later on the show. We're gonna have to
see. In all fairness, I didn't do it alone.
If all the other kids were jumping off a cliff, would you throw your clock over, too?
Well, it's kind of the law. I mean,
there's no law that says you have to change your clock.
Yeah, it's like state. Well, yeah, I'll be off from the rest of the state.
Oh, are they going to come and do arrest you? Sorry, sir, your clock isn't right.
I don't know what the exact penalty is, but showing up for things late might be a penalty.
Or would you be early?
Oh,
I don't know why. You set your clock back. No, wait.
And
which
fall,
one?
Yeah,
it's too confusing. Just stop doing it.
Technically, I didn't do anything. My phone and my watch and everything kind of did it automatically.
Not the microwave.
Not your VCR.
Your VCR.
Just saying.
Okay, you got me there, Brian.
Okay. With the witty comments is also joining us again is Brian Brow back from the grave. Wasn't feeling too good last week.
I had the flu, so no, I felt horrible.
You had the flu, we had Evo.
Yeah, well, who won in that case? I'm not really sure.
Pain. Yeah. Choose your pain.
Yeah. Huh.
Just choose
your pain. It's true. Oh, well.
Wasn't that what Cybok said? No. Share your pain.
Discovery. That's what the Klingons were saying that. Choose your pain.
Oh, my.
Oh, we're now quoting.
Star Trek podcast there, Chuck.
We should start that someday.
Last year.
We have some feedback.
Yay!
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day. Mailman.
Look at
mail,
all
mail,
the postcards we get.
That's amazing.
Those letters. I love those letters.
That's a bunch of two of them. Find out what you got to say.
Oh, boy!
Mailman.
When you're doing that. I keep thinking of like Rockettes, you know, they're dancing.
Right. You know, I was thinking that we should do an updated version of this. Emails. You got your emails.
We get more than email. We get physical mails as well.
People from the last century.
You get your asterisk mail.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. From your mail server. Instead, you know, instead we have these people that follow daylight savings time probably sent those in, I'm sure. Those people.
We have a postcard from our good friend Yorga, who went to Dublin. And on the back it says, "Greetings from Ireland, Yorga." So we have a very nice. Did you get one also? Oh, and now he's got to go get his.
You can't one up him.
No, I know what he's going to do. He's going to go get the one I sent him from Munich.
Yeah.
You got the Munich? You got the Munich one?
Here we go. I also got one from Yorga.
Nice. I like that. That's cool architecture. And? Look.
Also got one from Chuck from down
from
under.
From Sydney. And
I got one from up above. Look at there.
Nice.
Wow.
I sent the same one to Yorga. I couldn't resist. I was in the Munich airport going, I need a postcard. Oh, this is just too good. Now, I did not send that one.
Here, see? Down under, up above.
There I did not send that card to my daughters or my parents, just so you're aware. I usually would hope not. Five postcards, so they got a different one. I also got one from my daughter, Lisa, showing off the beautiful autumn colors in Michigan's Upper Peninsula.
Well, hi there. Bring it down some. Mm-hmm. There you go.
Craig's on the second camera.
Yeah.
Cut to camera two. So we have that. For the physical mail. Now you guys know. Thank you very much if you are interested. We also got an email. I believe it was email. Did we get this from Sherry?
Yes. Email. That's right.
Okay. Sherry writes and says, longtime listener. We know. You've been stalking us for years. She says, okay, but not for a while. Kids make me more of a stealth geek now. Mm-hmm. No, bring them into the fold. You listen to Technorama in the car on the way to school and explain what's going on. That's the way it goes.
You show them how to hack and teach. I was going
to
say,
teach a kid to hack, teach them to fish kind of thing.
Yeah, they fish. Yeah, fish for hacking.
Phishing is bad, guys. Phishing is bad. We know this. You don't click on those emails that say, hey, I am from the CEO.
Fix their phone. You fix it for a day. Teach them to fix their phone. You fix it for life.
Right. Yeah, right. Mommy, can you explain that the double innuendo that Chuck and Craig had?
Yeah, I don't think so.
What was that postcard, Craig?
What kind of mail I get?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's upside down. Sorry.
If you're listening in the car, you're not seeing the postcard, thank goodness.
That's true.
Writes in, longtime listener, okay, but not for a while. I already read that line. Anyway, I run ND's part, North Dakota.
Yeah.
Part of the Letters About Literature contest. I want to promote it using the letter song you guys use for the feedback. She's referring to this one.
Okay.
However, my Google foo is failing me hardcore. Where did you find it? I honestly don't remember where we found this. I think I asked another podcaster for it.
I thought it was from a Digital Juice.
You're right, because it does have that numeric prefix on the file name.
Yeah. And actually, I did a little geek foo, and I looked around, and I found some old TV show that was using it. And then they were singing something similar, but it wasn't the same song.
Oh, okay. Okay.
They were like listener letters. You know, it was something like that. It wasn't like David Letter. I'm talking like black and white TV.
And I was inspired by another podcaster who played something similar. So I put it in my Dropbox public folder and sent her a link and said, here you go. I sent her a shareable link from Google. So if you can't find it there, let me know. We'll get it to you. So there's also a second
part. Did you let her know? By the way, did you let her know?
Yes, I did. I responded back to her.
You put it in a public folder and just didn't reply to her.
Yeah.
So find it.
Yeah.
Find it. Good luck.
Google will find it. They find everything.
Yeah. Right.
We also got one from Claudio Miranda. He says, hey, fellas, I'm not dead yet. I don't want to go on the cart.
He'll be dead soon.
I'm feeling much better.
I think I'll go for a walk. I hope this makes it to the show tonight. He sent it today. That's like real time, just in time feedback. If not, there's always next week, I guess. Nevertheless, I thought I'd share this one with you guys, being a Unix geek / nerd that I am. Found this one on Reddit. It's a touched up BSD versus System 5 Death Star poster from back in the day when AT&T was suing BSD, aka Berkeley Software Design. I thought it was Berkeley Systems something.
Craig,
look up what BSD stands for.
Yes, Berkeley. Hold on, I'll tell you.
Anyway, I'd love to get a full size version of this bad boy if they ever remade it. And if you follow our show notes at chuckchat.com/technorama for this episode on airing the 7th, you will see a lovely image that goes through Reddit of I remember when AT&T changed their logo, they said, wow, that looks an awful lot like the Death Star.
Yeah.
So they hooked it up and crossed it with Star Wars and have a little numeric equation up there. It says 4.2 is greater than V, a.k.a. 5.
Yep.
By the way, it's distribution.
Berkeley Software Distribution?
That's correct.
Okay.
And I imagine that because that kind of carried over to FreeBSD, blah, blah, blah. And then...
Yeah.
You know, everybody's got a Linux distribution, so...
There was FreeBSD, OpenBSD, NetBSD. There were a ton of them.
There still are.
He's still listening after all these years. Yep. That explains a lot of things. Must be the Iserol. Oh, he is an old-time listener if he remembers the Iserol. 101. Did I ever explain that to you, Brian?
I actually remember it from way back when.
You can. It's not until you look at the letters.
Yeah.
Somebody signed their email that way, and we just died laughing.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. We also asked you. Yeah. That was a tearful moment, and it wasn't because it was sad. We also asked you last week. Our question of the week was, "What was the worst horror movie you've ever seen?" And Craig, I credit to you for coming up with wonderful questions because we got a lot of responses to this on Facebook.
Yeah, we did.
You are
36.
Tripping somebody's trigger.
Oh, yeah.
55 comments.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Okay, there are 36 main comments and then some sub-comments under that. Among them, Grant Pachoco writes, "Microwave Massacre gave me nightmares when I was a kid, but it's a pretty horrible film after all." And I said, "Hey, we think MST will do that?" He said, "No, it's a little too adult."
Yeah,
oh,
nudity
darn.
In it. Uh-huh.
Right away, my karate instructor came back and said, he posted this picture.
Monstered.
And there's a girl coming out of the toilet.
Right. He says, "Where do I pick up my first place prize?"
I love it. It's not a movie. It's a movement.
Oh, boy. We got my ex-wife's home videos from Barry Collum. Jay Langenjens triggered a couple of people, but they didn't come back. Megan Enlow said the 2016 election results. That's a pretty horrible movie. Joe Fiore has a couple in here. Hereditary was pretty bad. We've got Basket Case from Tiffany Van Boxtel. Joe also came back with, "Ever heard of Deathbed?
The bed that eats.
Oh, my goodness. Prophecies from Brian Malewski. Rick Stringer, who used to do the Variant Frequency podcast, "The Thing with Two Heads." I must see this movie poster.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah, it's basically a motorbike with a thug.
Two guys riding on a motorbike. The graphic's a little small for this. Yeah. But
it's like a white guy and a black guy?
Yeah, it looks like, yeah. Hmm.
That's worse than...
They transplanted a white bigot's head onto a Soul Brothers body.
That's worse than Zaphod Beeblebrox from the early... You know, when he had the side-by-side one, just never looked right.
Chain of
Souls. Scott Tyler did put in here Zombievers, which is on Netflix right now.
Wow.
Don't do it.
No.
Galaxy. Yeah, it's like radioactive beavers that are attacking people in a lake. Weber Baker says, "Failsafe, not really horror per se, but scary as could be. Anaconda, Plan 9 from Outer Space" from Brad Miller. The Star Wars Christmas special. I think it's actually the holiday special.
Yeah, it's holiday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Holiday.
Happy Life Day to you, too. Scary movie. We're getting into some actual real... Paris Hilton, The House of Wax. My wife still owes me for that one, says Dwight Dunlop. Polish Vampire in Burbank. That's an extremely specific scenario. I love the
commentary. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Jonathan Strickland said Gothica, Halle Berry.
It's pretty horrible
film with Robert Downey Jr. in the supporting role. The effects were fine, I guess. But I didn't either.
Terrible.
I like how Jonathan wrote the longest comment in here. That is so Jonathan Strickland.
Yes, it is.
He's like, he'll get into the lighting. this is like where Ben and Keith would go.
Yeah.
From his long comment, I imagine he sat there and thought about it for about an hour.
Probably
and banged
had to watch
it out for about
10,
15 minutes, and then he's good to go. So all in all, it probably spent an hour and a half on that comment.
Want a complete synopsis and play-by-play of the script? Well,
there it is. Yep.
Follow our Blair Witch Project. Adam Larson has another one in here. Zombie Ass, The Toilet of the Dead. These just sound terrible. Man, I wonder if that one's hooked up to... Paul Berg just put a picture, and you can guess what that is.
Oh, yeah. Snakes on a Plane.
Snakes on a Plane.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Somebody is typing a comment as we speak.
A friend of yours.
A friend is typing a comment. I have a friend on Facebook.
So what was your pick, Chuck, for worst...
What did we say, Craig? I thought we had something at the end of the last show, but I don't remember what mine was.
Well, the first terrible movie that pops in my head, which I kind of like it for other reasons, was Ice Pirates.
Okay, yeah, Space Herpes, you bet. Space Herpes is awesome.
You got one in mind, Brian?
Yeah, Robo Vampire. Horrible. Horrible. Horrible movie.
The movies that just shouldn't be made.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen some on MST3K that I'm glad they were.
Oh,
they were
Manos they were, Hands of Fate. Well, you know.
Oh, Manos is classic.
But wait a minute. Let's clarify this. You can't pick one that's been pointed out as a terrible movie by being featured in MST3K.
It's not as terrible if they have the commentary.
It's true. It actually is watchable.
It makes it entertaining.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So we have another question at the end of the show, and I will ask it on Facebook as well, in case you miss it or you're not a listener. You know what I haven't been doing? I haven't been putting the URL to the show in there. It's like, listen for your response I just thought of that. I'm getting a little better at this after years and years.
One day we'll get it right.
I keep having this like broken record in the back of my head that says, don't miss an opportunity. Don't miss an opportunity. Well, now I can get that.
You know
one.
What the Parsec should have? You know, the best improved podcast category.
It just took a really long time.
Exactly.
Most people figure this out in the first month. Listen, kids, I wrote a book on this stuff. I should know better.
All right, you ready to roll?
Ready to roll. Roll the D20. He's got two of them over there, so he should be able to roll something.
Not bad today. Do you want one?
I got a five over here.
I was going to say.
Go ahead, Craig.
All right,
my official one is the orange one, but I'm going to roll five of them just to see how badly I do.
All right, here we go.
Okay, my official roll is a 9. Oh, but I did roll a 20 over there.
Nice.
A 2, a 3, a 6, and a 20.
What'd you have, Craig?
I'm going with the 9.
A 10.
I had an 11.
Oh, 9, 10, 11.
How serendipitous.
Because 7, 8, 9. Okay, so what was it?
11.
Brian.
Craig.
Chuck.
Yep.
Okay, I'll do the intro. You read the first.
I'll read the first one.
And when I read the date, it was like, oh, it's got to be something about Columbus. It was not about Columbus.
No.
All right, where's our history music? Here we go.
Brace yourself.
On this day in history, for November 7th, 2018. Wow. I didn't know where to look on the screen. This is the 311 first day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There's apparently a bug in my algorithm somewhere. There are 54 days remaining in 2018.
It was on this date in 1492 that the Encisheim meteorite, the oldest meteorite with a known date of impact, strikes the earth around noon in a wheat field outside the village of Encisheim, Alsace, France. So there you go.
The London Gazette, the oldest surviving journal, is first published on this date in 1665.
That same date in 1885, the completion of Canada's first transcontinental railway is symbolized by the last spike ceremony at, good grief, Craigellachie, British Columbia.
November 7th, 1908, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid are reportedly killed in San Vicente, Canton, Bolivia.
On November 7th, 1910, the first air freight shipment from Dayton, Ohio to Columbus, Ohio is undertaken by the Wright brothers and the department store owner, Max Morehouse.
I can just imagine how that conversation was going. Hey, if we want to keep this airplane hobby going, we better find a way to make some money.
Yeah.
Why don't we take some packages?
Just use the truck. No, we can't
You're
do that.
Thinking about
Strap
it
this
wrong.
To your back. Go.
Hold this and while I wind the propeller.
Right.
Also on November 7th, 1940, in Tacoma, Washington, the original Tacoma Narrows Bridge, a.k.a. Galloping Gertie, collapses in a windstorm a mere 4 months after the bridge's completion. I'm sure you've all seen that video with the wobbly
twisting,
bridge and the car and then kaboom. No. Yeah.
It was on this date in 1944 that Franklin D. Roosevelt elected for a record fourth term as president of the United States of America. Good old FDR. Yeah.
And it was also on this date in 1967 that the U.S. President Lyndon B. Johnson signs the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967, establishing the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
And Mr. Rogers was very fortunate for that.
Sesame Street, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that must have been about the time Sesame Street started.
Started, right? Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Never thought of that. Also today in 1991, Magic Johnson announces that he's infected with HIV and retires from the NBA.
Oh, sad.
That doesn't seem like that long ago.
I know.
Wow.
Also, this date in 1994, the WXYC, the student radio station at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, provides the world's first internet radio broadcast.
A student radio station. Leave it to the students to hack something together.
Yeah, they're like, hey, we can put this on the internet.
If we just take this audio jack and plug it over here, we're good.
Yeah. And also on November 7th, 1996, NASA launches the Mars Global Surveyor.
Oh, yeah.
What has it surveyed?
Mars.
All I picture is two guys out there, one with the stick and one with the little sight.
They got the safety vests on.
To the left. To the left.
No, to the right.
Happy birthday goes out of this. Is it my turn? Who went last?
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
Happy
birthday goes out of this day to Polish chemist. I get the Polish chemist.
Of course.
And physicist. Oh, goody. Nobel Prize laureate Marie Curie. I shudder when I read Polish chemist. Born on this date in 1867.
Philip Morrison, American astrophysicist and academic, was born on the same date in 1915.
Is he the one who invented cigarettes?
No, probably not.
No. New Zealand astronomer and academic Gerard F. Gilmore was born on this date in 1951.
Oh, we got a couple of actors coming up. Child actors. American actor Christopher Knight. What'd he play?
Peter.
On the Brady Bunch, yep. Right. He's 61 today.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
Did his voice change?
No, maybe. American actress Dana Plato was born this date in 1964. Unfortunately, she has passed away.
And what show was she on?
Different Strokes.
That's right. What you talking about, Willis? Listener birthdays today go out to November 8th is Mark the Encaffeinated One, host of The Weird Show. He's also one of our popular people on the Dog Days of Podcasting. Yep. On the Drift on the 8th. Is that a name or a show? I forgot what it is. November 10th is the birthday of John Noble.
John Noble.
Yes. Well, it's from The Island.
Oh, okay. From The Island.
Was that a TV show?
It was a movie for sure.
Was John Noble in that movie?
No. I don't think so.
I'm not connecting the dots. Pippa from London, UK is on the 13th. Also on the 13th is Jennifer Therrien. I wonder if that's daughter of our great patron, Steve Therrien. That Therrien?
Maybe.
Yeah, that Steve Therrien?
You're all going to be famous when people go, wow, that John? No, not that. The one from Technorama. If you want to get on the show on the birthday calendar, you can go over to our wiki at chuckchat.com/wiki. Get your name out there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And if it is your birthday and you're not on the wiki, happy birthday to you. We wish you all the best and a wonderful, wonderful new year. How much music we got left in this? Let's listen. I'll tell you. Wait for it. If it goes up in tone. No. Okay, then we're going to march it out. All right. That's the way it was on this day in history for November 7th, 2018. Rather than wait for it to come around again like Arlo Guthrie.
You know what I was just thinking? I know this is probably common knowledge, but everybody except for Todd Bridges has passed away off different strokes.
Did Mrs. Garrett pass? Yes, you did this last year. Yeah.
Conrad Bain?
Conrad Bain, I think, has passed as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I think everybody.
Yep. He died in 2013. Of course, Dana passed away in 1999, and Gary Coleman was a few years ago in 2010.
Wow, yeah. A few years ago, 2010. Craig, that was eight years ago.
Yeah, of course, there was a whole bunch of other people that were on that show, but that's the main cast.
Sad.
We have a series of space-related stories. I think this whole show is about space, more or less.
I almost made it all about space.
Including the promo that I dropped in. So we'll go with that. We have news. We have something related to space. Oh, we'll just go.
Good space news, everybody.
Good news, everyone.
Good space news, everyone. Craig, you get to start us out.
Yes. And SpaceX's Starman and its Tesla Roadster are cruising the solar system. They're now beyond Mars.
They're beyond help.
Yeah, so Starman has put a lot of miles on that Tesla Roadster.
I wonder if you had the odometer running, how many that would be.
That would be funny. Yeah, where's the webcam on that, Elon?
You've exceeded the warranty in the first 3 weeks.
Yeah, so it's been flying around for the last 9 months. The red electric car and the space suit clad mannequin driver, which launched on the maiden mission of SpaceX's huge Falcon Heavy rocket.
It's a mannequin?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm disappointed.
You know why I laugh about this is because, did you guys ever see the movie Heavy Metal?
Yes.
It's the very beginning of Heavy Metal, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think about, except for he's coming back to Earth.
Right.
I would have played Heavy Metal on that car.
There you go. Yeah.
That was probably in the tape deck. Is there a tape deck in there?
No.
Eight-track, Craig. Come on.
That would be funny if there's an eight-track screwed to the bottom of the dash. Starman's current location, next stop, the restaurant at the end of the universe. Ha ha ha. SpaceX posted on Twitter on Friday. That was their tweet, along with an orbit diagram. You can see that diagram, and he's way out there by now.
It doesn't say which way he's going on the diagram. It's just a circle.
Yeah.
Actually,
he's just circling the block.
Those are very circular.
It wouldn't be.
Unless it's so slightly elliptical that my eye can't perceive it, but I think somebody just kind of cheated on the graphic.
What?
Well, there's a GIF limit, and they probably had to squeeze it.
I know it's not to scale. Look at the size of the sun.
All right, let me finish here. Okay. So the second sentence of that tweet, of course, is a nod to the late, great Douglas Adams, Restaurant of the Universe, the second novel in the Hitchhiker's
Guardians of the Galaxy.
My tongue is getting tied.
Hitchhiker's, the Guardians Hitchhiker's.
Tied to the Galaxy. I know what it is.
Hitchhiker's like Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, anyway. Okay, fine. It's beyond Mars. There. Move along.
Craig made a nice mashup we're going to work on now.
We're going to make Hitchhiker's Guardians to the Galaxy for sure.
Star-Lord's out there thumbing it.
Yeah. It's not a competition or anything, but you got like two heads. I got one. That's all that matters.
I suppose we're going to have to walk.
It's Drax.
Instead of Rocket?
Instead it's Drax. It's kind of like Drax and Marvin combined together.
I am moving so slowly that I'm imperceptible.
Nope. I can still see you.
I like that scene. As long as that scene took, I like that.
That's a pretty fun little scene, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Kepler, huh? Oh, yeah.
Kepler has finally exceeded done. It's signing off, ladies and gentlemen. Go ahead, Brian. Let's get this rolling.
So the time has finally come to say goodbye to Kepler, the spacecraft that exceeded expectations through its mission, yeah, and how, and so far confirmed more than 2,600 planets outside of our solar system. In March, basically NASA said, hey, it's going to be ending life. You know, it's almost out of fuel. Sorry, running on empty. There's no places to tank up out here. And they basically have put it to sleep and woke it up lots right. of times just to preserve what little they had left. And basically last month, they said, it's going to go at the end of the month. Yeah, pretty much done. So it is now officially out of fuel, and NASA has retired it after 9 years of observation.
9.6 years, according to the graphic on the screen.
Oh.
Check this out. 530,000 stars observed. 2,600 planets confirmed. They've actually confirmed, I think it says in here that they confirmed there are more planets in the universe than there are stars, if they keep this estimate on.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Of course there are.
Check out the fuel mileage
on
this
thing.
It's amazing. 3.12 gallons of fuel used. They got 9 years.
And how many miles out of it? You know, amazing.
94 million miles.
Yep.
Let's figure out the mileage on that. What is that, about 30 million miles of the gallon?
Mm-hmm.
Take that, Elon.
I think SpaceX should actually launch a gas station up there. They keep, you know, putting up things that need fuel.
I don't think it's using gas.
Oh, wait. They don't need a gas station because for the Tesla. I guess not. Oh, well, never mind.
they're siphoning the Tesla. Yeah, we gotta keep Kepler running.
Oh, we don't have the right kind of plug. We can't match it.
Oh,
it's male to male.
Have an adapter?
Yeah, adapter.
Who's got the USB adapter? USB-C.
I like that. 678 gigs of scientific data collected. That's, you know, you think, you know, nowadays that's
a lot.
That's a good amount of space. It's not quite, you know, terabytes.
They didn't fill up a terabyte hard drive.
But think about it, you know, how is it transmitting it? And
then again,
the distance.
10 years ago. Yeah, that's true.
That's 10 years ago. That was pretty impressive.
Not only that, but think about, you know, siphoning through it to make sense out of all of it.
Mm-hmm. How many times you have to retransmit too? Because you got partially fragmented files.
Ooh.
Ooh.
But anyways.
Somebody use the Y modem.
Anyways, thank you, Kepler, for your service. It was fantastic, all the things you gave us, for sure.
Did you just say Y modem?
Y modem, yeah, I did. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
What? Transmission.
X modem, Y modem, Z modem. Kermit. They need Kermit.
Yeah, there you go.
Kermit. Right.
What were some of the other crazy protocols we had back then?
Why don't they just use the Tesseract for power? It seems to last forever.
That's true. Except then, you know, aliens show up.
Oh, speaking of back then, I mentioned this to Brian before he came in. We watched the very first episode of Laugh-In on, was that Netflix, Amazon, Hulu? Where did we find that? Amazon, I think.
Was it on Amazon?
Laugh-In is on there. And we said, let's watch the first, because we watched the first Supernatural. We watched the first episode of MASH. And now we watch the first Laugh-In. They had a John Cameron Swayze Timex commercial.
Oh, wow.
He hadn't even devolved the takes a licking and keeps on ticking yet. Like, this is how early some of this stuff was. Like, say it. Say it. He got through the commercial. I went, oh my gosh, he didn't say it.
That's hilarious.
Wait, they had commercials or were they just doing an in-show
commercial in there?
Oh, it was an in-show commercial? Or was it like a real one?
Oh, it was a real commercial.
Like, we'll be right back. Here's a commercial. You know, Frosted Flakes or something like that. It was a comic.
That alone makes me want to watch more, even though the rest of the show was kind of repulsive.
I think it's better.
Oh, there's some stuff in there's some gems in there.
They hadn't got Sakatumi time yet. Goldie Hawn wasn't on there yet.
Very.
Yeah, they had the very interesting
but stupid.
He didn't say stupid yet. Yeah. It's like this.
He didn't have the stupid part yet.
No, they didn't have the stupid part yet.
All right, next story.
Next story. More space news. We need to think about here. Wait, it's
your turn.
I know. I know. Where is it? Not this one. No, not that one.
Have you ever wanted to own a piece of the moon?
This sounds like a sales pitch now. Now might be your chance. If you have
your $20
If you have $1 million lying around, next month, Sotheby's in New York will auction off some of its only moon rocks that can legally be owned by private individuals. The three moon rocks were first obtained by the unmanned Soviet Luna 16 mission in 1970 and were given by the Soviet government to Nina Ivanova.
Ivanova Korolova.
Yeah. I wonder if she's related to Susan Ivanova.
Probably not.
No?
No.
Well, she was from Russia, right?
Right. A little bit later.
Widow of Sergei Pavlovich Korolev, head rocket engineer in the Soviet space program during the 1950s and 60s. The Luna 16 mission was the first time that the Soviet Union obtained lunar samples, and it was just the third time ever following the Apollo 11 and Apollo 12 missions by the Americans. The Soviet lunar samples last sold at auction in 1993 when they went for, get this, $442,500 to an anonymous buyer.
Wow.
What would you do with those? I mean, would you just like, do you want to see my moon rocks? You know, I mean, and they're not very big. I mean, that's the other thing, too.
Right. These look like they're fairly tiny.
They're tiny.
Little specks of, you might lose them if they weren't in a nice container.
Yeah, a brass container like that, too. You know, like it has the microscope attached to it so you can actually look at them. Because otherwise you're like, oh, dust.
But you could say you own a piece of another world.
You know what? You know what I would do? I would get like, you remember those big magnifying glasses you used to put in front of a television so people could see?
You put those on top.
Put one of those behind. Wow, those rocks look huge.
You'd have to put them under a scanning electron microscope to make them look huge.
It's true.
It was the first time that a piece of another world had been offered for sale, but it wasn't even the most expensive item at the time. A Soyuz TM-10 space capsule from the same auction was sold for $1.6 million. This time around, the moon rocks are expected to go from anywhere from $700,000 to $1 million. Legally, any moon rocks obtained by NASA can't be privately owned, but these were nabbed by the Soviet government and were legally presented to a private individual, which makes their ownership perfectly legal. Sotheby's explains just how rare these rocks are. Quote, authentic lunar samples available for public acquisition maybe qualify as extremely rare, as title to lunar samples remains with the entities that collected them. The United States during Apollo 11 through 17 missions and the USSR succeeded by the Russian Federation via Luna 16, 20, and 24 missions, as well as with the countries gifted the Apollo 11 samples and Apollo 17 Goodwill moon. What, did they turn them into Goodwill?
No. Yeah. Hey, I got these rocks. Are they worth anything? I'm just going to give them away.
On behalf of the Nixon administration, these samples are subject to laws governing public gifts. And in most cases, as in the United States, the law does not currently allow for public gifts to be transferred to an individual. As such, okay, so they came back with the rocks and said, here, China, these are for you as a gift. Or Japan or whoever they gave these to.
They can't sell them.
You can't sell them. Interesting.
Well, remember we had the story about Neil Armstrong giving a lady, was it Neil Armstrong or somebody gave a lady private moon rocks? He gave it as a gift. I don't remember if it was on Technorama.
Can he do that?
Yeah, basically he collected himself and then gave them to
her. But he was on the moon. He was on a government mission.
Yeah, I know. But so, but, and that's the big thing. There's a lawsuit. There's a lawsuit about it. Yeah. Because basically she's saying, hey, they're given to me as a gift, you know.
Okay, well. So, but, I don't,
yeah, I know. Good question.
I think they technically would belong to the U.S. if it was collected by the U.S.
Hey, our tax money put in there.
They belong to all of us, just like the roads.
That's right.
And the schools.
All right.
And our government paid officials.
They belong to us.
You work for me, pal.
We're giving them to China. Right. Here you go, China. These are for you.
Yeah.
All right, Craig, you want to talk about the solar probe that just did some amazing things.
Mm.
That's right. So NASA's historic mission to touch the sun just reached two important milestones. It now holds the record for the closest approach to the sun by a human object, or human-built
object. How close was it?
And it was also the record for the fastest spacecraft ever sent to space.
If it got a gravity assist around the sun, it might go back and get some whales, which we read about last week. The whales went silent.
Mm. See, people, what I've got to deal with, listener.
We're hijacking our own show.
Yeah.
It's the thing to do.
So at 1:04 p.m. Eastern on October 29th, the spacecraft got closer than 42.7 million kilometers. That's 26.55 million miles from the sun's surface, a new record for a human-built object. The old record was held by German-American Helios 2 spacecraft, which achieved the feat in April of 76. From here on in, every inch closer to that the probe gets to the sun will be a new distance record, with the closest approach of 6.16 million kilometers.
Oof.
That's 3.83 million miles.
So it's currently... it's currently at 42.7 million. 42.7 is getting down to 6.16.
Yeah.
Sure. At what point does it just burn up?
Right.
I don't know how close it can get till it burns up.
And how do you measure the distance to the sun? It's just a ball of gas. It doesn't have a surface. Are you measuring to the corona?
There's a center to it.
You're not measuring to the center of the sun, though.
Well, you know how they measure the center of a town by the main post office? Maybe that's it.
Yeah, it's true.
The post office on the sun.
Yeah, that's what, you know, when you empty your trash on your computer, that's where it goes. It goes there, and it's just incinerated.
Yeah. Oh, and it's just been 78 days since Parker Solar Probe launched, and now we are come closer to our star than any spacecraft in history. Parker Solar Probe project manager Andy Dreisman said in a statement, "It's a proud moment for the team, though we remain focused on the first solar encounter." Less than 10 hours later, the probe set yet another record, attaining and surpassing the speed of 246,960 kilometers per hour. It's 153,000 miles per hour. The Parker probe became the fastest ever human-built object relative to the sun. Okay.
Wow.
The previous record was also held by the Helios 2 mission. By 2024, the spacecraft is expected to reach speeds of in excess of 692 kilometers an hour. That's really almost twice as fast as going now. So 430.
That's almost three times as fast.
Yeah, almost three times, I guess.
Wow.
Well, then again,
0.0006% of the speed of light.
And it brings to, not only are we talking about heat, we're also talking extreme stress from speed on the probe. So that makes me wonder, how is that thing built?
Well, you don't have gravity. And
well, no, but I mean, it just you're still coming, you're going super fast. So I mean, it's going to generate some friction of some sort.
Well, fly her apart then.
They've gone to plaid.
Yeah, exactly. Ludicrous speed. So that's pretty cool, man.
Well, the speed of light is 300,000 kilometers per second. And then they're just shy of 300,000 kilometers per hour. So if they could speed it up just a little bit more.
We said, boom.
Then we can go get the whales.
When that thing finally crashes into the sun and it tears it up and it messes up, the sun
for us.
Well, is it going to crash into the sun, or is it going to ricochet around and go into orbit? I want to know what the point of this mission is.
I imagine if it's getting closer and it's faster, it's going to eventually hit the sun.
Not necessarily.
Oh, it says here in the article, if you read a little bit further, it tells you kind of a little bit what they're going to do.
Okay.
It. So, yeah, over the next 6 years.
You want me to read it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's fine. You go ahead. Over the next 6 years, right down there at the next paragraph of it.
Over the what?
The next 6 years, the probe's orbital length will gradually shrink, allowing it to get closer to the sun.
Okay.
As it gets nearer to the sun's surface, the probe will face formidable heat and radiation.
You think?
Which it'll fend off with a maneuverable shield always pointed towards the flaming ball of fire.
Captain made America of vibranium.
This mighty shield.
Yeah. It's made of vibranium, yes. Sorry, Cap, we need to take this and borrow it for a while.
Take one for the team, man.
You won't need it anymore. Don't worry. Oops, spoiler.
Spoiler. In case you missed it.
That's pretty cool, though. So it is going to be slowly but surely getting closer and closer and closer and closer as it goes around.
Yep.
Dang.
Darn. Another space object we have to say goodbye to. All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back with a couple of strange stories and some poetry you won't want to miss. So hang on. I almost hit stop on the recording. That would have been bad.
Yeah. Don't do that.
Take a facts-based journey through the cosmos with AstronomyCast. Join me, Dr. Pamela Gay, and my co-host, Fraser Cain, publisher of Universe Today, as we discuss not just what we know, but how we know it. Topics range from dark matter to why Pluto isn't a planet. Get your episodes today at astronomycast.com or look for us in iTunes.
This is Richard Garriott.
Lord British.
Private space explorer. You're with Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Chuck and Craig at Technorama.
I'm sure AstronomyCast does their space news better than we do.
But are they as fun?
Right. There's a reason why we haven't been asked to be on that show.
It's because Craig keeps giggling at Uranus.
Yeah.
So
in their support, Fraser Cain has co-authored a book about the universe. So if you go to the space and astronomy section on Amazon, it's right up there with Dr. Michio Kaku and Neil deGrasse Tyson. It's like number 1, 2, and 3 are their books that keep flipping around. It's doing really well.
You got it? Did you pick it up?
It's on its way. He said, I'll have the publisher send you a copy.
Oh, man.
Ooh, look at that.
So I'll make sure you get it. I'll make sure you get it. And then we'll interview him and support their book. Because I love reading me some good space books.
That's right.
All right.
Hey, and now, speaking of space between your ears.
It could be useful for something, finally.
Yes.
Who's next on the block here?
I think I am.
You are? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, one of you two. Y'all fight it out. I'll watch.
We'll roll for 20.
Okay, fine. Let's go. Okay. Oh, I'm ready to go.
Oh. What'd you get?
19.
15. The one time I roll well and I'm outrolled.
Yeah, I know.
You need to pick up the new dice. You need to throw all those out, pick some new ones
get some new ones.
I'm rolling the one that Scott Tyler got me originally. I think the ones from Dragon Con are busted.
So, the future of your passwords is your brain.
Well, I should hope so. I got to remember enough of them right now.
You don't have a password manager? Come on.
I do. And I have to remember the password for that.
Okay, well, that's enough, yeah. So your brain is an inexhaustible source of secure passwords, but you might not have to remember anything. Uh-huh. Passwords and pins with letters and numbers are relatively easily hacked, of course, yes. Hard to remember and generally, well, insecure. So biometrics is the way to go. Biometrics are starting to take it. Of course, we have fingerprints, facial recognition, retina scanning. In the data centers that I've always been in, that they have retinal scanners in our data center.
Okay.
The other one we had was biometric. You had to put your hand in there and it scanned your hand as well as your badge. So all sorts of things like this. But now they're more secure, but they have vulnerability.
And what would that be?
Guess what? You only have one face.
So if it gets hacked, you can't
10 fingerprints. You can't change it exactly. Okay. So
gotcha.
Yeah, if you're compromised, you're kind of messed up. So like username and passwords, biometric credentials are vulnerable to data breaches. In 2015, for instance, a database containing the fingerprints of 5.6 million U.S. federal employees was breached.
Oh, that's nice to know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember it very well when it came out and everybody's like,
I got to change my face again.
Yeah, exactly. We're issuing new fingerprints this week.
I got to put in eyes.
Yeah. So, the next breach could be, so they got fingerprints this time. Next time it could be photographs of the person. So that way they can do facial or get the retinal scan data. So basically then that's useless. You can't be, what are they going to use on you?
So what's the proposed fix for this, Mr. Brown?
So, what they do is they say when a person looks at a photograph or hears a piece of music, your brain does a certain wave on it, essentially. So they can basically take a measure of your brain with electrical sensors.
Okay.
And so what it is, so they basically put a measure with electrical sensors placed in your scalp. Every person's brain responds differently to an external stimuli. So even if Chuck and I both hear the same piece of music, Chuck's brain's going to be like, what am I doing for Technorama this week?
I might be spacing out and you might be having a good
flashback. Chuck will be like, I hate Led Zeppelin. You'll be like, I love Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, exactly. It could be. So
I wouldn't say that, though.
Well, me either. But this process is automatic and unconscious. So a person can't control what your brain responds to. The brain is the brain. So, everybody sees a photo of a particular celebrity. The brain goes different ways. I see Bradley Cooper and I'm like, he's an okay actor. Craig's like, he's hunky. So, yeah. I mean, it's
brain and brain. What is brain?
Yeah. So everybody's brain's going to be different. So that's why they're saying, a person's brain password is a digital reading of their brain activity while looking at a series of images. Just as passwords are more secure if they include different kinds of characters, letters, numbers, and punctuation, a brain password is more secure if it includes brainwave readings of a person looking at a collection of different kinds of pictures.
So if you were hacked, you could just switch out the pictures and say.
And it's different.
So I have one visualization of how I picture this going.
What's that?
Donna's got to find it. Did I put it on there? There it is.
Yeah.
That's what you got to wear.
It's great Scott!
It's the Doc Brown helmet.
That's what I was thinking. Okay, this is all great, but if you're trying to get in your data center and you're going, oh, dang it, I got to get in.
Well, yeah. So what they do is they have a hat, basically, or a padded helmet like that, with the sensors inside it. And what it is then the monitor would display, and they say, for example, picture of a pig, Denzel Washington's face, the text of Call Me Ishmael, the opening sequence of Herman Melville's classic Moby Dick.
Right.
And so then basically it records your waves and it registers it just for those things. And at that point in time, basically,
I want to know, are the readings going to be the same, say, if you came to work drunk?
Ooh. Hungover.
Your brainwaves are going to be screwed up, right?
Maybe that's a very good question.
Hey, if you're drunk and at work, there's probably a reason you don't need to get in.
Yeah, that's true.
Be let in. It works anyway.
Hey, but the one thing the other side of this picture you didn't show was I want the sucker on Marty's head.
That's more
convenient than in the hat.
Yeah, the hat is the security guy reading your password, and he puts the sucker on your head to read it.
Sir, can you put this on, please?
No. They wouldn't ask. They just right on the forehead like that. So yeah.
You're selling me a subscription to a magazine. What do you think of the idea overall? I mean, would you slip on a hat as a password authentication system?
Absolutely. My thing is that it's way more secure than any other methodology. But the question is, I don't think it's mature enough just yet.
Right.
I think it's getting there, though, really soon.
And they did mention a form of two-factor. So you'd have to have something, then it would be a brainwave. Right.
What about the YubiKeys and, things like that,
they're hackable too. I mean, that's the problem, is those keys are hackable as well. They're just not as secure. It's pretty much it. I mean, look at, we're putting chips in our credit cards now and they're not even secure. They're already hacked. I mean, that's what's hilarious. It's like, the chip and pin's going to be much more secure. It's already hacked. I mean, and that's the amazing thing. It's a little harder to hack somebody's brain, but it does bring up interesting things of kidnapping people for their brain, for the passwords.
Ooh.
I have a very specific set of skills.
You have just gone
dark
to a place where I wouldn't have thought about going, but you're absolutely right. Somebody couldn't stop you.
No.
That's what you do. I mean, that's the whole point.
I have visions of those movies where they hold your eyelids open.
Oh, no, yeah, no. All you have to do is hold them down and then put a hat on them, you know, and essentially.
Like Loki and Hawkeye.
Yeah.
You know, with the eye thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's creepy, but, you know, I also think, like, bad guys have to think so I could fight the bad guys. That's part of the deal, you know. That's why they always say the best hackers are the ones that can be hackers. So,
you know, if you knew the pictures that whoever was supposed to look at,
right,
they could be somewhere else and you could just show them the pictures and get the, you know,
you're right, the brain.
You can't just get their brainwaves if they're riding on a bus or something.
Yeah, you can't do it.
No, you talked about kidnapping. I was like, all you gotta do is show them the pictures.
Oh, yeah. That's exactly it. You kidnap them, put the hat on them, and basically start showing pictures until you get the right brainwaves for it. You know, and it
makes me think that there's a second level of something in there. So it's not only enough just to have the brainwaves, but you'd have to put them through some sort of
stimuli.
Key.
Yeah.
So even if I stole your brainwaves, I wouldn't have the key to get in, you know, to end up with the same thing.
Right.
Sort of like the Enigma. It had like multiple levels. It had the rotors.
Right.
And the wiring.
But still, they figured it out eventually.
Yeah.
So, I mean, everything's hackable eventually. You just need time.
But if I ran your brainwaves through my private key, ended up with a result, it would be way different. You would have to not only have Brian's brainwaves. You'd have to have my private key and your security badge to get into the data center. Oh, yeah, that's a lot to ask, but you're right. It could happen.
People will go through those links, you know. It's crazy. But enough of the brain.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead, dude.
What if my sober brainwaves were the same as your drunk brainwaves?
Wow. That says something about your brain, John.
Clinton is starting to prove that Craig and my brainwaves are getting in sync.
So if I captured one of you and then scanned your brains,
you'd have half the password.
I know exactly. That's what I'm thinking. I'm like, or at least this, or maybe something similar. Maybe I can get close. You know, is your password Basset Hound? No, it's actually Foxhound, but you know, it's close.
May the force be blank blank. What could that be?
Equal to mass times? Oh, nice.
Hey, do y'all use the YubiKey or the Titan key or any of that stuff at your work?
We use different kinds of keys, but yeah, we do. We have quite a bit of security because we also have to get into the Fed. So there's a huge amount of security trying to get into the Federal Reserve. Imagine that. I don't know why.
I'm thinking about picking one up because I know that LastPass supports the YubiKey.
Right.
Anyway, I was thinking about it. Just want to get some more feedback about it.
I haven't used that one, so I don't know, but curious to see what it's like.
We've officially ruined Clinton's master plan.
Yes. Sorry.
Hey, even Google supports, well, they have the Titan and the YubiKey and other support for all those other keys. So I don't know. That's why I was thinking of picking one up because.
Speaking of bad movies, have you ever seen, just Titan made me think of this. Do you ever see the movie Amazon Women on the Moon?
No, I've heard of it.
Okay.
That should go in our bad list.
No, it's actually pretty funny. I mean, it's got a bunch of actors and actresses that you'd know, like, you know, Rosanna Arquette's in it, Arsenio Hall's in it. Sketch things. But anyways, there's a sketch about this kid buying condoms and they're called Titans. And that's it. And then he's like, you know, you did say Titan, didn't you? Really loud, the old pharmacist, like he's trying to discreetly buy condoms back in the day, you know, back in the 80s. It was like, oh, God. So, but anyways, just every time I hear Titan, I just go, just that very reason. Watch that movie if you get a chance. It's definitely dated, but it's still amusing.
All righty. Should we move on to our last? I think this is our last story.
Yeah.
That's
all you.
That's all me. For the first time, physics created a fifth state of matter in space.
Really?
This is cool. In January last year, a rocket carrying a tiny chip packed with rubidium-87 atoms was launched more than 200 kilometers or 124 miles above the planet's surface. The mission was brief, affording just 6 minutes of microgravity at its height. But in that time, the tiny chip briefly held the record for being the coldest spot in space.
Huh.
On top of that, German researchers still managed to cram more than 100 experiments. The results are set to impact how we will one day study big things in the universe. The matter-wave interferometry in microgravity, or the MIAS-1 experiment, launched from the Kiruna in Sweden. I didn't know they launched things from Sweden.
I didn't know either.
I thought everything was from the Cosmodrome these days. It was the first of several missions aiming to study the special fifth state of matter called Bose-Einstein condensate, or BEC, under microgravity conditions. Collections of atoms usually jiggle with energy in such a way that we can theoretically see them as individuals weaving through a crowd. Once that energy is taken away, they fall into a lull. For all purposes, ending up with an identical set of characteristics or quantum states. Rather than jump to their own beat, they become indistinguishable, a superparticle with one identity. This condensate is incredibly useful for physicists wishing to probe the deeper nature of how particles behave. Forcing particles to be quiet typically entails holding them in an electromagnetic trap while carefully tuned lasers strike them with perfect timing, a little like hitting a person on a swing in such a way that they slow down rather than speed up. I love their analogy, by the way. Once the atoms are quiet, the trap can be turned off, and the experiment can begin. Just be quick. You need to catch the atom cloud before it drops to the bottom of the container. Without gravity ruining the party, researchers would have more time to conduct their more complicated experiments. MIAS-1 is the first attempt to create a BEC in free fall. Usually, BECs need a room of equipment to cool atoms, so researchers from a number of German institutions had to first work together to miniaturize the setup. The end result was a small chip containing atoms of rubidium. I think I'm saying that right. Yes.
Rubidium?
Rubidium. I'm sorry. There's okay. Rubidium is the stuff they put in Spock and Kirk's arm.
Yeah.
Rubidium, which could be packed inside a sounding rocket, an unpiloted research vessel, and shot up to a height of 243 kilometers or 143 miles. At its summit, the chip cooled its contents to, get this, minus 273.15 degrees Celsius. Oof. That's just slightly warmer than Wisconsin in January.
Slightly.
This is a degree colder than the Boomerang Nebula, which holds the honor of being the chilliest natural object we know of. So for a moment, that cloud of rubidium atoms was literally the coldest known thing in space. For 6 minutes, the rocket experienced minimal gravity before accelerating back to Earth. In total, a research team poked and prodded the cloud 110 different ways to gauge how gravity affects the trapping and cooling process and how this cloud behaves in free fall. So a lot of cool research. I encourage you to go and read the rest of the article.
That's really neat.
Yeah. This is a fifth state, so we've got solid, liquid, gas, plasma, and now BEC. I never heard of BEC.
Me either at all. So
this is new. I wonder what they'll learn by, can you harness BEC for energy, or I want to know more.
It's really interesting. I mean, I'm just reading through the rest of it as well. You can basically detect, looks like waves potentially pick up different frequencies in current procedures. So, yeah, it's just ultra cold research doing in free fall. That's really cool.
The research is published in Nature is how the article closes out. So I encourage you to go through our show notes again at chuckchat.com/technorama and take a look. We have to give a shout out to the chat room. Who have you seen out there?
Well, I've seen a bunch of people.
Long-time listener Kathy Luke.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let's go from the top. So okay. Clinton Alvord, John Miller Jr.
Yep. Michael King, Tim Elliott.
Down. Mark Trouble.
Mark Trouble.
Lisa Lubaka Pullman.
John Miller Jr. again. Kathy Luke.
Steve Horwood.
Where'd all the names go? You know, this Facebook thing is kind of weird. I can't see all the names.
I know. And if you change to like the Technorama account, you might see different names.
Yeah. Not sure how that works.
What the heck?
Thanks, technology.
Yeah. And then all the other names go away. What the heck? Yeah. Facebook, figure it out. All right. If you are watching or have watched, thank you very much for catching us live. We also do this show. We'll put it on YouTube. We've got the podcast coming out on Wednesday, sometimes Tuesday night, depending on Craig's release schedule.
Tuesday evening, it always comes out.
We do this live on YouTube, Sunday night at 9:30 Eastern time, so catch us there.
Wait, no, we don't.
What?
On YouTube?
No. Live. Facebook. Did I said Facebook?
You said YouTube.
Oh, I did?
That's okay.
Pardon me. We do it on Facebook. We used to do it on YouTube years ago, but yeah, Facebook's a much cooler party to go to. Well, at least for getting more people to watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when you got thousands of followers on Facebook, you go there. When you got hundreds of followers on YouTube, no, not so much. Thank you to our patrons. Let's give them a big shout out. We want to make sure that we get our newest, latest, and greatest patron, because this show is very much supported by you, and we really, really appreciate that. Thank you to Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills. You guys rock. Megapodtastic, Night Gig Studios. Gary Lindros and John Clifford are among the winners. Leon, that John Noble. He's now that John Noble to us.
No, he's not that John Noble.
He is to us.
Okay.
He is to us. He's going to become more famous than that John Noble.
Oh,
great. Wow.
Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therrien, Jorgis Rowan, John Miller Jr., whom we've
mentioned. That John Miller Jr.?
Yes, that John Miller Jr. Amber Elstad, and our latest and greatest favoritist, Harold McKinstry. I just had to do that with the music. Thank you very much for your contributions. You get not only a shout out in the chat, a shout out in the show every week, but you get special content available only to our patrons.
How do they become a patron, Chuck?
How do they become a patron? See that URL on the bottom of the screen? Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast is where you can go for as little as a dollar a show. And you only pay when we produce.
What a bargain.
What? Dollar a show. Yeah. That's like,
shut up and take my money.
No,
hey,
kidding.
This show is worth at least $1.50.
Oh, easily. So. Easily.
Value. The value proposition is just overwhelming there, Craig.
All this entertainment for $1.50? Sure, why not?
I'm in marketing and you're not doing it for me.
Okay.
So thank you to you wonderful people. We will get your content out on Monday. You get your show before the other people do. It's a wonderful thing. All right, I introduced this crazy application, and this is one of my favorite poems. I heard this years ago. I don't even know if I have the song in here. I don't. Rats, give me 1 second to see if I can find that. I meant to have that available in my music. I forgot to set this clip up. IDs, music, and I believe it was down here. Yes, I got it. Okay. Oh. I heard this first on... Garrison Keillor did it on, it wasn't Prairie Home Companion. He had a segment in the middle of the day called The Writer's Almanac, and he had this song that went something like this. It's time for The Writer's Almanac. Trying my best, Garrison Keillor. And he had a poem called My Love Is like a Red Rose, a very famous poem, and I believe it's supposed to be read with either an Irish or Scottish accent. You'll hear it when it comes out in some of these words. My love is like a red, red rose that's newly sprung in June. Oh, my love is like a melody that's sweetly played in tune. So fair art thou, my bonny lass, so deep I love am I. So deep in love am I, and I will love thee still, my dear, till all the seas gang dry.
So all the seas gang dry. 'Tis a sea gang dry, my dear, and the rocks melt with the sun. I will love thee still, my dear, while the sands of life shall run. Yeah, it's Scottish. It's a Scottish poem. It's an old one. Yeah, it's a fare thee well, my only love, and fare thee well a while. I will come again, my love, though it were 10,000 miles.
Okay, now I ran this through.
Legend has it that if you swim in the springs, you'll be fresh for the rest of your days.
Irish spring soap. that's
terrible, terrible.
Okay, this went from English to Czech to Bulgarian to Canada to Norwegian, Russian, Polish, Irish, back to Canada, and I'm finally back to English. And this is what it came up with in a new dialect. My moon is red, rose red. This happened in June. My moon is beautiful. These are sweet melodies. You are beautiful, my friend. I am very surprised. And I will defend you, honey, although the sea group is dry. Although the seabed is dry, stone sun, I love you now, honey, even if the sand works. And you only one, now I still come, honey, although it was 10 miles a kilometer.
That is great. I love that translator thing, dude. That is probably
I got to get this off the screen. I'm blocking Craig's face.
Hey, don't do that.
Isn't this fun?
That is great. Mm-hmm.
Did you hear Evo try and sing the safety dance last week?
No, I didn't.
He really soldiered through this. It was painful, but he went right after
it. It was painful for us. He was having a good time.
I'm sure he was.
He was trying to keep the meter and the song
right, the same beat.
It wasn't working.
The words start getting weird, and then,
it went from the safety dance to the security dance at the end. Like, somehow they just slipped in security at the end.
Wow.
That was brilliant. All right. That brings us to the end of the show. Well, with poetry and everything.
Wow.
We want to hear from you. What is your most disappointing purchase you thought was going to be awesome?
Ooh.
I can tell you when it was. I don't know if I should mention the business, though. It was a subscription to get like furniture and whatnot at a discount. So you paid the subscription. We never used it, ever. I think it was only supposed to start the first time we paid for something and ordered it through them, because we thought, oh, we're going to be moving to Arizona. We'll probably need new furniture. We're not realizing Mike was going to leave us half the house.
Right, exactly.
Stuff.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
We really don't need anything. Maybe for the guest house. No. Yeah. And when it came down to it, it was all just too expensive and went, well, there's a lot of money that we didn't need to spend that week.
We could have just went to IKEA.
No, please. God, no. No, 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 no.
Meatballs.
Yeah, meatballs. They have good
Bad
meatballs.
Bad news, everyone. The Super Collider Super. So I exchanged it for this wobbly CD rack and some rancid meatballs.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Come on, the Hergen is awesome.
Oh, boy.
We know that.
I got two cabinets over here from IKEA. They're called the Brusali.
Wow.
Or if you want to sound more like Jackie Chan, they're the Brusali.
Wow. Hey,
how many times have you bought an electronic device and thought, oh, man, this is going to not change your life, but, yeah, you know, change things or do whatever, and it just kind of...
I don't know if it was necessarily the purchasing part, but I remember as a kid...
Oh, lots of stuff. My kid, yeah.
We would get things for Christmas, and it wasn't the name brand one that all your friends were getting, and you got like the knockoff that just didn't work quite as well.
The lightsaber, which is a flashlight with a
paper towel roll.
Yeah.
We got you a GI Tom. You're like, but he's got only one arm. He's a war veteran,
and it looks like Fonzie.
Exactly.
You know, we had some friends. They were participating in a Halloween thing in the town next to us, and they were building these characters they were going to put around town, and they built the Trashformers, and that's what I was thinking of.
Trash.
Hey, Billy, here's your toy. These are Trashformers, not.
All right, that takes us to the end of the show. We're going to post that on Facebook, see what people come back with. And we appreciate you sticking with us through this whole thing. I know we ran a little long this time. You can always listen to this in bite-sized chunks, come back to it.
I would put an iPad in there.
You were disappointed by an iPad?
Really?
Yeah. The early ones, yeah. It's like,
I know you were kind of disappointed with your iPhone.
Well, that's just because... You know, that's Apple. Never mind. No, the phone was fine.
Wow.
The phone was fine. It did everything, but not for me.
It's okay. Not for you, Jen.
Yeah, not for you, Jen.
Now I get to ponder this for a while.
All right. We are going to come back next week with your answers for that. So thank you very much for joining us. We appreciate your support. Thanks, Brian, for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
All righty. Thanks, Craig, for all the help with the show, the prep work, and everything else.
Yes, sir. Thank you for hosting.
Fun hanging out. Thanks for the bandwidth, Cox Cable.
Yeah.
We're using new fast bandwidth this time.
You sound like a NASCAR driver thanking all the sponsors. You know,
with stickers on my...
Yeah, I want to thank the Cox supported podcast.
Thank you, Podcasting for Dummies.
Yeah. And the Podcasting for Dummies tires got me around the track.
All right. You can find all our information over at chuckchat.com/technorama. And... we'll soldier on. So have a good week. We'll see you then. Till then, Craig, give me a binary high five.
101.
Yay!
And turn left.